All right, what is up, guys? Welcome back to the THB Strength Podcast. This is episode 3 of season 4, and today's episode, we're going to be talking about, is it possible to get too strong, or is getting too strong detrimental? Is that even a thing, right? And what happens if you get too strong, and what does that look like? What happens in terms of rate of force development, impulse, all of those kind of technical terms that actually dictate the output that you see in a jump? So I guess I'll direct this to you, Isaiah. Can you be too strong? Do you think you can be too strong?
No, 2 foot jumper. I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No.
I think, watch your mic.
I think you can focus on strength training too much.
I'm saying max strength. You get your deadlift up too high. You get your strength where your freaking squat too high.
Are you still jumping and periodizing and...
Let's say...
on that stuff? Or are you just, like, powerlifting?
Yeah, let's say it's just powerlifting.
Oh, then I think you can... Yeah, I think it can be too big of a focus.
Too big of a focus?
Yeah.
What do you think happens when guys get too strong in your eyes?
I think...
What happens to rate of force development?
I think it can go down. I think peak force goes up, but time to peak force... might stay the same or go down.
I agree. And I think it actually depends on how well trained you are, because if you look at research, it's like pretty clear cut that one of the best ways to get better is to just get your strength up, your strength higher, get your max strength higher. The problem is that when you do that, you can, as for an elite athlete, is they can actually change the time to peak force, right? That can actually go down, because if you're squatting, say, 1,000 pounds, right? How long does it take to get there? I don't know. It could take 5 seconds to get enough force in that position. Or if we put you on like a mid-thigh isometric pull, and I said just stand up as hard as you possibly can, and we looked at the force plate data, like from 0 to 150, I don't know exactly what happened there, but definitely from like 0 seconds to 600 milliseconds, I think that would definitely change. I think the slope would be less steep, which means that you're going to have a lower rate of force development. I don't know what happens... I would think the whole thing would just shift downward, especially if you're a sprinter. That's like mega detrimental. You know, I mean, you're talking about something where you're on the ground for no time, basically, right? And even if it is isometric, if you're looking at like the calf, let's say that the calf is perfectly isometric and you're just bouncing off the ground by striking your foot into the ground, that has to be super fast, pre-contraction, touching the ground, generating that force, and then... you have to maintain that force, shut that muscle off, get ready to strike the ground again. And you're seeing that at, like, the hamstring as you're extending the knee. You're seeing it at the quad right before touchdown and then push off as your hips are rolling over your foot. So I think that it ends up being really detrimental for sprinters. And one-foot jumping, I think it could potentially be bad. The caveat is that the great equalizer of specificity and jumping regularly may overwhelm the tendency to generate force, greater force over more time, right? Yeah. So if you are doing that, right, and then you're like still jumping or you're doing complexes or supersets where you're doing like heavy lifting and then plyos, you might be able to offset the tendency to generate force over longer periods. And I think we've definitely seen that with you, right? I mean, what's your ground contact time on a 2 foot jump?
My most recent one where I tested 50.5 was 0.26. And what's really interesting is in 2022 when I tested 50.5, maybe 50 if the vertex was off, was 0.28 or 0.29.
So you're better at handling force fast.
Yeah, I got both stronger. I would say I got stronger in more specific ranges of motion for sure, like way, way stronger. But the time to peak force also went down, I think.
Yeah. Well, maybe not time to peak force, but time to, like, relevant peak force in the gym.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, you're probably not reaching
I'm not at peak force.
I mean, the thing is, in a stretch shortening cycle, you probably are in a stretch shortening cycle. But it's a stretch shortening cycle.
Yeah.
So it's, like, in an elastic activity, your time to peak force probably... it is probably peak force. Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming you don't pull your muscle squatting.
Yeah.
You pull your muscles during a stretch shortening cycle, so intramuscular forces are really high. And I think on a force plate, in a jump, you're going to see way higher force, peak forces. So, yeah, you probably did, which is interesting. And then in a squat, I don't know if it's that you don't connect the dots enough to think that, like, squatting is jumping. And, like, maybe that's the difference. Like, some people, I think, they think squatting is jumping, and they don't realize that it's not. Like, the point of squatting is not necessarily to be jumping. The point of squatting is to get your muscles bigger and stronger and upregulate your nervous system.
What's really interesting is this last year has probably been some of the most I've ever jumped compared to, like, 2022, 2021, 2020.
You think so?
If you think...
because you would have got hurt in...
My right left jumped twice a week for a pretty significant portion of the year. China, how much jump volume I had there. I got through two cycles of plyometrics.
Right, so not left-right, but you're saying general
just total
jump
plyometric contacts. Like elastic contacts. Yeah, high-intensity elastic contacts went through the roof. And my ground contact time got shorter. And then I also got stronger on top of that.
And like healthier.
And healthier. So.
Were you in pain when you tested 50.5 the first time?
Yeah.
You were?
Oh, yeah. That was a bad one.
Like the jump hurt?
Yeah.
What about the second jump after you hit 50.5?
That whole session.
Because you went 50.5.
That whole session. The whole session was like I was like at a 4 or 5.
You think you could have torn it?
I was on the verge, yeah.
You think so?
It felt the same.
Based on like when you tore it.
The day I tore it, the jumps leading up to it felt exactly the same as the day of my 50.5. It's just, it never crossed.
That's terrifying.
That's why the day I tore it, I jumped because I was able to.
Because you've
felt
tested 50.5, right? You're like, oh, if I push, there's nothing bad
is going to
happen.
The day I tested 48, also. Same level of pain, yeah.
Almost 48.
2020, summer 2020, like 2 months after the TFL pain.
When we did it at TNT.
Yep.
That's actually crazy.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about. So you had it for 3 years before it probably partially tore.
Yes.
Something happened. We don't really know.
I had it for 2 years and 8 months, 2 years, 9 months, something like that.
It's possible, like, that also is a reason why. But that, I don't know, because output's not going to change. I mean, you could still jump hard through, like, in pain, right?
Yeah.
Like, 100%?
Yeah, I was, like...
You were pushing maximally.
I wasn't guarding. There was times where it would be too much. But when adrenaline's involved, that's usually, like, I can be in pain... And I can push through it, if that makes sense.
So then when we talk about...
This last day, when I tested 50.5 most recently, it was nothing. No pain at all.
But you took more reps to get there. It was, like, different. It wasn't as...
Yeah. Before, it was 2022. It was, like, within 10 jumps, I got there.
Yeah, which is crazy. Okay, so back to the topic, talking about being too strong. Yeah. Do you think that... You could get so strong to the point where you would actually be doing more damage to your body each strength session than benefiting it. Like, to a point you wouldn't be able to recover from.
Recover in what way?
Like let's say your max squat, I don't know, let's say maximally your squat. Let's say tomorrow you had a 600-pound squat, but you had built up to it over, whatever, 3 years. Like, over the last 3 years, instead of your squat being 500, it's 600 or 650, right? Do you think that... When I put a session in that says, hey, back squat at 80%, back squat 6x3, last three at 80%, that's going to, because now you're pushing, well, let's say your max is 600.
Yeah.
So you're pushing 120 minus 480.
Yeah.
Almost 500 pounds for three reps, three sets of three.
Yeah.
480 for that. But you're stronger, right? It's less percentage of your max. Do you think that would just crush your tendons, ligaments, connective tissue at that point, and you wouldn't be able to bounce back?
I think so. Yeah, definitely, actually.
Like,
I've noticed that even now.
There's got to be a point where...
I've noticed it with half squats, too, specifically. So deep squatting kind of rough on my back and stuff like that. With half squatting, I can definitely feel, like, my tendons and ligaments, like, it just is more, like, it's more loading. More loading through there.
Which is good.
And if I put 100 pounds more on there, like, I can only imagine.
So then the question becomes, when you get that strong for performance, right, do you work at suboptimal loading
to maintain health,
but maybe improve health, right? Change, yeah. Tendon qualities change, cartilage qualities change, whatever, fascial, let's call it fascial slings.
Like slow cook it more, basically.
Yeah, yeah, basically. I mean, and then but it's then like at that never point, touch max strength.
At that point, though.
Your strength's going to go down.
Yeah, because you're not like.
I think what you could do is sub-maximal lifting, and even though your max isn't going to come up, I think you're still going to maintain. I mean, if you get to the point where your max is 650, it's not going to drop 150 pounds lifting 3 days a week at 70.
I mean, I think right there 70%. We're just getting into the limit, the human limits. Because you could,
you're already at the human limit.
I think theoretically, if you could lift,
that's like if you took steroids.
I think theoretically, if you could lift without getting hurt, and you continued pushing your max, and then kept doing RFD work, like explosive strength work, jumping frequently,
plyos. So like a hypothetical world.
Yeah, yeah. You could continue jumping higher.
You think so?
I think the reason strength training at its max, like reaching someone's like capacity, like when you just start getting to those like 600 squat levels, 700 squat levels.
Right.
I think the reason it doesn't help is guys start getting hurt. I mean, I remember talking to Jay Clark when in COVID, he got his squat to 500. Also, remind me to talk about a second point about strength training.
I'll remind you.
That I want to talk about. But I remember talking to him, and he said when he got his, it was like a legit legal powerlifting squat to 500. And he said he could just feel, it was just way tougher on his body. His joints, you know what I mean? His back was getting loaded. And it's like, at that point, you're just kind of just doing more damage.
Yeah, like you can't bounce back from it. It's worse than a jump session.
Yeah. And then the thing that I wanted to bring up is I think another issue is athletes start adjusting their technique to hit those higher weights.
You're right. It's like you didn't actually get stronger. All you did was hinge a little bit more, put your shins vertical, and loaded your knee less. Like almost if you think about being only lifters, right? Being able to lift those weights in squats and stuff like that. I mean, first off, you don't see guys built like you doing that. The first thing you think of are Chinese weightlifters. That's like the first thing that comes to mind, you know, or people built like that.
Bro, on my Instagram, I put all my maxes. I was like, how strong do you have to be for a 50-inch vertical? And then I put all my top lifts, like my most recent ones. And there was a comment, and it was a sprinter, actually. And then he was like, oh, like these are my numbers, and it was almost the exact same as mine. And he's like, why can't I jump like you? And then I go on his page, and the dude is like 5'6".
Oh, really?
Yeah, the dude's like 5'6", and I was like, there you go. And I think I replied, I was like, oh, like you take one athlete A, that has way longer legs, same height, way longer legs compared to athlete B, way shorter legs, longer torso. One of them, they have the same squat numbers. It's more likely that athlete with the longer legs is going to jump higher.
I 100% agree with that. I think that's Dan Back made that point. Shout out Dan Back. He made that point, I think, I don't even know when that was. It was a while ago. He talked about it. And he pretty much said, like, I'm trying to think of how he worded it. He was talking about how his other friend was able to lift more weight than he was. And he was, but he couldn't jump as high. And then Dan basically talked about, oh, are you doing ISOs?
Yeah, I completely forgot to do that.
Me too. And then he started talking about how, you know, he was like, oh, well, he needs to lift way more weight to be able to be at the same levels of torque relative to his limb lengths. And I was like, oh, so great point. Yeah, you can lift more weight, but it's about lifting a lot of weight relative to your height, right? Yeah. Like it's torque, it's not just force. I think, can you be too strong? I mean, if you get too strong, what's gonna happen? I think your numbers drop because the slope changes in short. That's what Rolf had found with Randy Huntington. And Randy Huntington, if you guys don't know who that is,
can you change the slope, though, is the thing.
You can. So that's what periodization's for.
Yeah, but so the thing is like, that same guy.
Damn, my knee feels great.
What
right
if
now.
You...
What the hell?
What if that same guy... Actually, let's take me, for example.
Let's take you, for example.
If you could clone two of me, and then you just do a ton of RFD work, assuming I'm healthy.
Can you press start on that?
Do a ton of RFD work on me, right? And then the other me... You get my max strength up a ton to like a 700-pound squat, and then you do RFD work.
I think you're going to be fighting that slope desperately.
Yeah.
I'm saying if you, well, at that point, right? Like, let's say hypothetically you didn't do anything but just focus on max strength.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, you didn't maintain RFD. You just said, I'm going to just do max strength in spite of everything else.
Yeah.
I think you're going to be fighting for your life to get the slope.
What if you're jumping frequently?
Jumping frequently?
Same thing. Once a week. What if we only did max strength cycles, still implement overload, variety?
Okay, and you just do max strength?
But it's only max strength, and I jump. And I'm jumping one to two times a week.
Are you still power cleaning? Or are you taking that out?
Let's take full cleans.
Full cleans?
Yeah. Like, max strength stimulus is only, like, no...
So, like, everything has to be basically at 80% or higher.
Yep.
Like, no power cleans, no power
snatch. It's, like, basically deadlifting.
Oh, powerlifting? Okay, okay. So, you're, like, basically west side. You're basically west side plus jumping once a week.
Yep.
I think your vertical goes down. I think maybe marginally goes up or stays the same or maybe goes down a little because... you're just going to be so good at lifting and moving shit slow. Or you're going to get hurt. I mean...
But does the jumping balance...
Assume you don't get hurt, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of, like...
My question is, is jumping enough?
How are you doing the reps? Are you doing high VBT reps every rep?
Oh, that's actually a good point.
Let's say you're doing it for VLO.
Max intent.
Max intent.
Max intent on top sets.
Max intent on top sets, but those are at 80% plus.
Yeah. My thing is, like, is the jumping enough to bridge that gap? Or is it worth doing?
I think you would hit training monotony. Like, in my head, I think about you getting really big, really heavy.
Yeah.
You're being able to jump, like, one or two times, and maybe you jump higher those one or two times, but then, like, you either drop off, the session quality drops off really fast, you either get hurt, or you... I don't even know. I mean, I think about Jay Clark, bro. Look at Jay Clark.
Yeah.
He did that. That's basically what he did.
That's true.
Did he jump higher? Nope. No. Was he maintaining jumping? Yeah. Like, I think you would be so... Here's what...
That is a really good point, actually. Think about the quality
of your jump sessions.
They would decrease for sure, yeah.
You wouldn't be able to touch...
But you'd still deload. Like, you'd still...
I don't think you would recover. I don't think you would be at high enough RFD long enough to see improvements. You would always be functioning suboptimally in your jump sessions.
Yeah.
Right? You'd always be functioning kind of shittily in your jump sessions. Eventually, that shittily is going to become the new norm. And then let's say you just drop off all the fucking lifting. At that point, you're just doing block periodization. You're not doing west side anymore. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be the only way, right? You would have to back off all of the strength work for a really long time.
Yeah.
Like probably 6 to 12 weeks.
Yep.
If you train for like 16 weeks, probably 6 to 12, maybe even 16 weeks. And then you'd be like, oh, actually, I just need to go back to doing what I was doing before. That's what would end up happening.
I do think, because in the past, I feel like I just consistently jumped so well after max strength cycles, hypertrophy cycles. But more and more, I think our hypothesis of plyometrics serving as general work is more and more true. After this last kind of macro cycle that we just did, I'm actually questioning even that. I'm starting to think they might.
Well, you did hit 50.5 after doing plyos, technically. Yeah.
It was plyos and then
like you're questioning,
and then taper.
So you're questioning if it's general work, you're saying?
Yep.
So like, you think it is more specific?
At first, I used to think they don't help.
But look at me. Off one.
Yeah. But the thing is I look
I
at you.
Suck.
The thing is, I look at you and I'm like,
he's hurt too. He's e-training faster. But I maintain jumping once a week still. Yeah. I still maintain jumping once a week.
But I still think in your case, if you had been completely healthy.
I was completely healthy when Hunter and Dom were here. I just fucking sucked. That was my third week.
But you were hurt after.
Yeah,
during
that's
the taper.
Weak.
During the taper.
That's 3 weeks. If you look at research says 10 to 12 days. I'm just someone who has experientially known
it takes
longer
a long time
than
to bounce
3 weeks.
Back.
I mean, technically, I'm just at 4 weeks now.
Yeah.
And I haven't really jumped off one. I've been jumping off two. But I don't feel like I would set a fucking world record right now, even if I were healthy.
Yeah.
I just don't feel that pop as much. Like,
jumping
is better than plyos. For 1 foot, I think. Like, plyos don't bridge the gap for dunking. For dunking. Now, high jump, maybe it would be different.
Yeah.
High jump, I think it would be different.
Well, that's where the taper comes in. Because mine wasn't, when I jumped, well, it wasn't right after plyos. It's like we tapered off and then brought my max strength up a tiny bit. Like a tiny bit back.
But your volume was so low. You did one session.
Yeah, that's true.
One session. You basically microdosed it.
Yeah.
You did how many? You did 20 plyo contacts, high intensity plyo contacts?
Yeah. Well, I'm also thinking like February.
Yeah, but that was.
Or December. Utah.
But that. Okay. But that.
Like I did. I've done. I did about like 3 to 4 weeks of plyos.
Not total. No way. Count your contacts. If you count your contacts, I bet you probably did in 3 months. In 3 months, you probably did. It's probably
and then the sessions.
Four you also sessions. Let me just think. Four sessions, mini jumping. I probably gave you 4x10 for 2 to 3 exercises. So let's say 80, 120. So about 200 a week, 200 to 300 a week. But you only did that for 2 weeks. So let's say 400. You're probably at about 420 to, plus jumping, it's a lot higher. Plus sessions is a lot higher. But
yeah.
I mean, in 3 months, you're definitely higher than you've been, but it's over 3 months. December to mid-December.
It was like December.
Till mid-March.
And no, yeah.
But you have to think of like how much more, take the sessions out. Just look at how much more you were doing than usual. Cause you've already adapted that.
Stimulus. Yeah.
So it's not really doing much in the way of like a new novel training stimuli. That's stuff that you're very accustomed to. So you're probably at, I would say you probably did about 400 extra contacts.
Yeah.
Okay. In 3 to 4 months. I did that in 1 month.
I mean, that would explain why. So what if you had done the same volume I did?
I mean, that's really low volume. I don't think anything would have happened.
Yeah.
I don't think it's enough volume to see anything happen for me. And the contacts that you did were not the same as the contacts I did.
Yeah.
I did all elastic, high impact elastic collisions. You did long ground contact time, long time under tension.
But I'm a 2-footer and you're a 1-footer.
Yeah, but I just think it's... That's my point, though, is that they're different.
Yeah.
That is my point. I'm saying for a 1 foot jumper, that's the whole point I'm making. For a 1 foot jumper, yeah. I just don't think
But what I'm saying
for a dunker,
is,
a 1 foot dunker specifically, yeah. I don't think that it, I just don't, I have not in my entire life outside of when I was 14 years old seen it help that many guys other than high jump. In high jump, I think it really helps a lot. Like in high jump, actually, ironically, Not ironically, in high jump, I have found that less is more with plyos. I have found that getting guys super strong, super powerful, and then very low volume of plyo contacts, but intense plyo contacts, works incredibly well. But with dunking, that has never been the case for me. Ever.
Yeah.
Not at all. The faster the contact, the more that works. For dunking and just like vertec and shit, I have always jumped my best when regularly doing the vertec and staying really fresh. That's when my vertec touches get the highest.
Yeah.
And well,
and you're healthy.
No, and like staying healthy. But that's how I stay healthy. Because if I do a lot of plyo contacts, I'm not going to be healthy. There's no way. Because I spend all of my jump points on that, and I can't get to the intensity where I have good adaptation unless I have a decent amount of contacts. I can't get to 100% unless I'm on my third or fourth set. So what are you going to do? Once a week?
So what would happen?
What if you were
able to jump frequently, like vertec, and you do plyos? And then you spend a month tapering off from the plyo. Like, keep the jump, like your sessions the same, but take out all that.
The only way that could happen where I stay healthy and have high quality, I don't know if that exists. I don't know if there's a world where that exists.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I don't really think it can. I mean.
Yeah, that's kind of like same with me, like the squat example. Like,
yeah, it's like. Okay, so.
Hypothetically,
I'll give
it could
an example,
work.
I'll give you an example. So in June or July, I did that last year, leading into dunk camp.
Yeah.
Right? Coming into dunk camp, it was like, actually during that full session, I didn't really get hurt. My tendons were a little bit sore, but like I did the ground contact plyos that were the most specific from the heights that were the most specific. So 24 to 12 inches, right? Very fast ground contact times, within reason for the plow context, right? Yeah. And I would take off days when I needed it, and I was regular having sessions. My vertical was not good, not great.
Yeah.
My set, the only time that plyos really seem to potentially help is when I microdose them for about 2 weeks. I microdose them for about maybe 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I microdose them for 2 weeks leading in to dunk camp, and then return to max strength stuff. And then I went on a tear of dunking.
Yeah.
Like before that, but it's like, I think plyos work for dunking, and most athletes in very, very, very small doses. Yeah. I don't think you can fucking.
Like, I mean, even me, the reason I had a low volume of plyos is because I got hurt.
Yeah. I think if you do it, you can do it in very, very, very low doses. And it could help. But then it's like, is that the reason you got better? Or was it the 90% of the other stuff that you did that you were spending your time on? Like, you know, just sitting back and thinking about it, that's what I realized. I mean, we could alternatively say, and I think the answer to this question is yes. Is there a point where plyos hurt? Yeah. Fuck yeah. Like, I think for sure more plyos is not better. I think they're super fatiguing. I think Verko Shancy was right. I used to think that he wasn't, because I was influenced a lot by Thomas Kortenbeck, who hammers plyo volume for his athletes and their high jumpers. But that's not been my experience whatsoever with any of the athletes I've worked with. Like high jumpers, etc., where their programs make them do a ton of plyos. It's like, there are some guys that it works for, but it is far and few between. It is not consistent. It's random almost. And I don't even know if that's why those guys are getting better. Like, there's
so much discrepancy in how you do the plyo too. Like,
some guys absolutely suck at them. And then at that point, I'm like, you're just a genetic freak. Like, you know, you're not like the rest of us. Your tendons are stiffer than anything else. And maybe it's that their tendons are stiffer than anything else, and they suck at plyos, suck at plyos, suck at plyos. And then all of a sudden, their RFD goes up to the point where they can use their tendon. Yeah. And now they, you know, they're at the point they can store energy and release it in the tendon. Yeah. Like, maybe it's a crossover. Because that's usually what happens in high jump. High jump, it's usually like you suck, big breakthrough, you jump 8 inches higher, and you never go back.
Yeah.
That's usually what happens for guys. And then they stay there for a while. They don't really get better past that point. And they're like, well, I'm just going to do the thing that got me better in the first place.
Yeah.
Maybe the reason why they got better is because they were weak. Their tendons were very stiff. They were not able to store a lot of energy in it, right? Or any, right? And then one day, their RFD shot up because they're doing a lot of jumping or a lot of plyos, and the muscle's still getting, still getting stronger.
Technique got better.
Technique got better, right? And then now all of a sudden I can actually load my really stiff tendon, and now I jump a foot higher. But they don't jump a foot higher every year. They just have that big breakthrough. And that happens like post-puberty. Guys do that. It happened to Vernon Turner. Vernon Turner, high jumper for Oklahoma. That's what happened to him. Never really got better after that. High school jumped way better, maybe jumped an inch or two higher in college. And it's like, you're tempted, I think, to be like, well, let me just go back to doing what worked for me initially. Because it worked then, it certainly will work now. But that's not the case. That's not how stuff works. That's not how it works, in my opinion. That's not how it worked for me. It's not how it worked for you. It's not how it works for him.
That's why I think variety is so important.
I think it's variety and LTAT. I think it's long-term athletic development. Yeah. I think you can't, like, plyos and shit are important. Don't get me wrong. And I think for dunking, like low rimming and stuff, I do think that's maybe the caveat of like, but if you low rimmed every day, I don't think you would get better. Even if you could stay healthy, I don't think you would jump higher.
Yeah.
I think your force output would go down and you would jump lower.
Mm-hmm.
I stand by that.
You get stronger.
All right, so in conclusion, low dose plyos, I think, work. What else? You can be too strong. No, you can't be too strong if you do.
You need to be healthy enough to train.
You need to be healthy enough to train, and I still think you cannot get away from the principles of specificity, increasing intensity, and decreasing volume over time. Those are training laws. I don't think you can get away. You can't get away from individuality. Those things will always stand true, even if you are perfectly resilient and injury prone.
Yeah.
I think so.
All right. Cool.
See you guys. Any other comments before I shut this off? This is usually where you say something intriguing. I'm just going to keep the camera rolling.
Oh, if you want us to coach you to jump higher, go to thpstrength.com.
We're really bad at that. No, your call to action was good the other day.
Yeah.
Where you spent the first minute going over it.
It was really low energy today.